So in this text that we are doing today, called Bhakti Sudha or Nectar of Devotion, today we'll be doing verses number 16 and 17. Verse 16 is on page 27. Just to summarize, 2 weeks ago, last week we talked about there are 3 paths to reach the Lord. Actually, there are 4. One is the path of Karma Yoga, or the path of service, the path of Raj Yoga, which is breath control, meditation, and quietening of the mind, and the third one is Gyan Yoga, or the path of knowledge. And we had studied 2 weeks ago that Karma Yoga, the path of service, leads to purification of mind. When I'm helping others without selfishness, it reduces my anger, greed, jealousy, and increases my love. In the path of meditation and breath control, it leads to stillness of the mind, what they call as chitta nivritti. There is total quietening of the mind. And in the path of Gyan Yoga, or the path of knowledge, there is this feeling that there is one consciousness, all pervading, and everything is Him and I am Him. And that is very good. But in the path of devotion, we found that all 3 can be obtained. When I am serving the world, when I see God in everybody and everybody is the same, then how can I have particular love or hatred for anybody? How can I have anger, greed, jealousy? I have spontaneous love for all. Also, when I am thinking about the Lord in total love and devotion, my mind becomes still. And I get the knowledge that the God that is everywhere is also in my heart, so He is not far from me. So in the path of devotion, we get all 3. We get the benefits of service, the benefit of meditation, and the benefit of knowledge. But the teacher says that the path of love or devotion gives you something more. Not only those 3, but something more. And what is that more? We'll talk about today. What additional can I get in the path of devotion or the path of love? What more? That is the question. So verse number 16. Bhavanando na bhuyeta. Bhavanando nu bhuyeta. Bhaktairyasarasatmakaha. Yasarasatmakah yogi bhirno palabhyeta. Sakhya dasyadi rupakah. So bhava ananda. Ananda means joy. Bhava means attitude. You develop a particular attitude of relationship with the Lord. That's called bhakti and bhaktai. And by the devotee, he gets a joy which is called rasatmaka. Rasa means juice. Now when we say you have fruit and you have freshly yourself taken out the juice, not bought from a can or a bottle, but you have freshly taken out the juice, it's so sweet. It has the very essence of the juice, the sweetness. So similarly, in devotion, you get the essence and the sweetness of the Lord. What the Lord is and how sweet He is, how wonderful He is, that essence you get. But a yogi, one who does meditation and quietens the mind through breath, we are not saying that these paths are not good. They are, each one of them is capable of taking you to the highest. The path of service, the path of meditation, the path of knowledge. But here, because this text is of devotion or love, he's trying to tell us that what is the benefit of not only practicing these paths, but when you practice them with love for God, what additional you get. So he says, yogi bhi na upalabhyeta. By doing pure yoga, meditation, without love for God, you cannot get what? The relationship with the God, or Sakha, Dasya, servant, Adi. the different forms of relationship with the God cannot be obtained by a yogi. Say a yogi sits in meditation and his mind becomes still and his mind disappears, then there are no thoughts. So how can I have any particular thought of relationship with God? Like a devotee of the Lord, when he sits and thinks about the Lord, what does he do? He develops a relationship of love. As we have talked here before, God is not somebody to be feared, not somebody to be think as a distant, far away, some power, you know, some emperor or some judge sitting there judging me and then throwing his, you know, punishment at me and all that. But one has to develop a relationship of love. And in our scriptures, they describe five different relationships that one can develop with the Lord. Like Christ said, He's the Father in heaven. So in Hinduism also, they worship God as Father or even as Mother, because a lot of religions where worship Mother Goddess, like we have Mother Lakshmi, Mother Saraswati, the various goddesses. So people develop a relationship with a particular form of God and say, He's my Father, like Vishnu, you know, He's my Father, He's my Creator, or my Mother Saraswati or Lakshmi or Mother Durga. So that kind of relationship of love. Other people develop a relationship that He's my loving Master. Master means not as in the form of a slave or commander, but one who loves me and has lovingly sent me here to do His work. So I'm doing His work, but as a humble servant, but out of love. Not that I'm being forced to do it, but because I love God and He loves me so much and He has given me this knowledge. So I share this knowledge with everybody. He has given me the ability to serve. So I serve the world as His humble servant. And also there you can include Him as a teacher. That like in here also in Gita, Lord, we see the Lord is teaching the student, so the teacher is another form of relationship. Then several people develop a relationship of a friend, that God is my friend. And there are a lot of people who do that, that God is my friend, He loves me, He takes care of me. And in that relationship, there is no fear, because in friendship, you are free to say anything you want and you have total unconditional love, you have no expectation. In a true friendship, you don't say, oh, he's my friend because I get something from him. No, I love that person, and whether he does anything or not for me, I have total unconditional. That we see in Sudama and Krishna, or in Arjuna and Krishna, we found that there was a relationship of a friend. Many people love God as a child, especially women. You find that even in Christianity, they love Him as baby Jesus or baby Jesus. And they think of Jesus, the baby form, as God. And they love Him as God, and they will develop that kind of relationship. Even in Hinduism, you know, people have baby Krishna and they will love Him. They will change His clothes and feed Him, and then they will put Him to sleep. So a relationship of a child, that God is my child. And they will even scold God, and they will even tell Him, you know, you are not giving me what I want. But it is just as a mother loves a child spontaneously, totally, that kind of relationship. And then the highest relationship that is there in any religion is that God is my beloved. Like in Christianity, the nuns say that I am married to Jesus, so Jesus is my husband. Or Mirabai used to say that Krishna is my husband, and nobody else. She gave up her husband, her family, her kingdom, everything, so that I am married to the Lord. And many religions say that, in fact, there is an interesting concept that we are all females, Atma. We are all females, and He is the only male, Paramatma. Atma and Paramatma ka relationship. The relationship between the soul and the supreme is like the relationship between a husband and a wife. So total unconditional surrender, you know, just as a wife surrenders to the husband, or the husband totally thinks about them and totally loves her and totally is ready to do anything. So that kind of relationship with the Lord, that's how it should be. But a lot of times we find in the world that that is not there, but for a true beloved, a true devotee of the Lord, there is complete, total love and surrender. And the joy of a devotee is even greater than the joy of reaching heaven. Because we have talked about before, heaven is the place where when you have done good deeds, you know, you go and enjoy for a while, you enjoy the pleasures. But heaven is not an eternal place. Heaven is eternal, but our stay is not eternal. After you have exhausted your good deeds, you come back. And then you go through your journey of life again. And then ultimately, you have to go beyond heaven where you become one with God. And that's why they say that man is not only confined by the intellect, but intellect has to be accompanied by love. When both are there, then that joy is even greater than joy of heaven. Talking about heaven reminds me of a little story of love between husband and wife. So one time this wife died, and so she had done a lot of good deeds, and so she went through all the steps, and they said, okay, you come to this final door. And there was Saint Peter was there, and he said, you know, I'll ask you a simple word. If you can spell it, you go to heaven. Otherwise, across the street there is hell. You have to go to hell. So she says, what is the word? So he says, spell love. She says, L-O-V-E, love. So, okay, good, you are admitted to heaven. So as she was walking in, there's a red phone rings. And Saint Peter picks it up. He says, oh my, God needs me right away. You know, God needs me urgently. I have to go. So he tells the lady, can you sit on this gate for a few minutes? I'll be back in about 15, 20 minutes. She said, what am I supposed to do? I don't know. What am I supposed to do at this gate? He said, no, it's very simple. When you sit here and anybody who comes, you ask them to spell a simple word. They've already been pre-screened and they've already passed all the tests. And you ask them to spell a simple word. If they spell it, you admit them to heaven. If they can't, you tell them to go to hell. So she said, okay, I can do that. That's not difficult. So she sits down, and soon as she sits, she sees this man walking up. So she says, oh, that's my husband. He says, darling, what are you doing here? He says, honey, you know what happened right after I buried you in the cemetery? I was going out and I was hit by a drunk driver and I was killed. So I just followed you here. So he says, what are you doing here? She says, well, I'm here just to ask you a simple test. He says, what test is it? He says, if you pass the test, you go to heaven. And if you don't pass, you go to hell. He says, what is the test? He says, you just have to spell a simple word. So husband says, what word do I have to spell? She says, Czechoslovakia. I guess she didn't want to be with him. The point is that is not true love. You know, true love is where you are together. And so the true love of a devotee for the Lord is eternal love, where there is no ending. There is no, always we are together. In fact, there are so many songs, beautiful songs about relationship with, and especially Mirabai, and even in Tukaram and in Saint Francis, Mother Teresa, you find so many examples of great saints who loved God for what he was and developed a relationship. But there is something more that distinguishes devotion from knowledge. What is the difference between the path of knowledge and the path of devotion? Here mostly we were talking about the path of yoga or meditation. But how about in the path of knowledge? So Swamiji here says in the verse number 17, Yada devastatha bodhah jnana yogyasya lakshanam yogasya lakshanam yatha bhavastatha devah bhakti yogasya lakshanam yatha deva tatha bodha means, bodha means knowledge. So as God is, that is how I should know him. Where? in the path of Jnana Yoga, in the path of knowledge. Lakshana means indication or the characteristic of the path of knowledge is, as God is, I should know Him. So what does that mean? That means when I go to a teacher and learn, so they say, well, in the path of knowledge, we talk about Brahman. Brahman is who? That all-pervading, formless reality that is everywhere, and that is the substratum of this universe. This universe is a projection upon that, and you and I are illusion. This whole world is an illusion, which has been proved very well in the path of knowledge. I'm not putting it down. And they prove it scientifically that this world is an illusion and a projection upon that consciousness, which is all-pervading, which is formless. Now, in the path of knowledge, I don't have a discrimination to choose. I have to accept it 100% once I have studied from a teacher. It's like somebody shows me a rose flower. I say, what is this? Once you have understood, and somebody has told you it's a rose, you say it is a rose. You don't say, I think it is a lotus. You can't. The moment you call a rose flower a lotus, that is not knowledge. That is either ignorance or superimposition or wrong knowledge. True knowledge is a rose is a rose is a rose. And so there is no choice of discrimination. So similarly, in the path of knowledge, when you are explained the nature of God as the all-pervading reality, the substratum of this universe, and this universe is an illusion appearance just as a snake upon a rope, then that knowledge you translate it into and say, okay, there is this all-pervading and He is me and I am that. In that, there is no room for discussion. There is no room for doubt. There is also not a room for developing a form. You cannot have a particular form of God that I can love, because that is formless, all-pervading. But in the path of devotion, it says in the second line, yatha bhavas tatha devaha, just as your thought is, just as your feelings are, bhava, whatever attitude, that is God. You can pick what attitude you want to develop from God and how you want to see God. Bhakti yogasya lakshanam, that is the indicator of bhakti. That is what is the characteristic of bhakti, of devotion. So people ask, who is God? We say, how do you want Him to be? What do you want? He said, how do I know God? He said, how do you want to know Him? You choose. There is no fixed form given. Okay, this form alone is real, or this way alone is real, or this path alone is real. They say, as many devotees, so many paths. Total freedom is given to you. How do you want to know Him? You choose. How do I want to reach Him? How do I want to pray to Him? How do I want to serve Him? You choose. Somebody says, I love to dance. They say, okay, dance for Him. Wherever you are doing a dance, do not say, you know, I'm a great dancer and I go to an auditorium and the auditorium is only half full. You know, tickets, I'm not going to dance. I'm a great dancer. I don't dance till the auditorium is full. No. I'm dancing for the Lord, and if there is one person in the auditorium or 1,000 persons, I dance with the same attitude. Like singers, you know, when they sing, if they say, if you are a good singer and you are singing songs, sing for the Lord. Think that the Lord has given me the ability to sing. And whenever I sing, it could even be a film song, could be a Hollywood song, could be a rock song, or could be a song of love or devotion. But the ability to sing has come from Him, and when I sing for the Lord. And it doesn't matter whether people appreciate or not. As long as my Lord, my beloved Lord is happy, I am happy. And so with that attitude, then every activity, when I'm cooking, I cook for the Lord. Yes, my children will be eating or my guests will be eating, but I see the Lord in all the children. I see the Lord in my guests. When I'm sweeping the floor, when I'm picking up the, you know, the garbage in my house, whatever activity I'm doing, when I do it for the Lord, then that is my way of serving Lord. That is my way of knowing Him. And so no matter what I am doing, I'm always praying to the Lord. Whether I'm driving a car, whether I'm everything is done for Him. And this reminds me of a very, very beautiful story. Tansen, as people from India know, was a great singer, one of the greatest singers ever in history. And he has composed a lot of original ragas, a lot of original compositions, and he has actually been the backbone in many ways. Of course, there were other great musicians also before him, but he has also contributed a lot to Indian classical music. And he was a singer in the court of Akbar. Akbar was a famous king, emperor of that time. And Akbar was known for getting scholars, and they would be great scholars in his court, and he would give them patronage, he would give them money, give them a job, give them a place to stay, so that they would then perform in his court. And his court was known for its scholars, you know, great writers, great musicians, great singers. So one day Tansen sang a beautiful composition. You know, so Akbar the king says, "Tansen, you are the greatest singer. There is no greater singer than you. There cannot be in this whole country." So Tansen says, "Maharaj, jahan pana, O Lord, O your highness, I'm sorry to say, but I am not the greatest singer in this land." He says, who can be greater than you? He says, "My guru, Haridas ji, my teacher, my guru, he is actually even a greater singer than I am." So Akbar says, "Really?" He says, "Call him here. Call him to the court. I'll give him as much money as he wants. Send a, you know, chariot and go bring him here." He says, "Your highness, my teacher Haridas ji never goes anywhere. If you want to hear him, you have to go where he is. He's not going to come to your court. You may give him 1,000 gold coins. You may send any kind of chariot. He won't come." He says, "Okay, let's go. We'll take all our courtiers." He says, no. You know, he doesn't like all this pomp and show. If you want to go, you have to put on simple clothes, hide your face, and go like an ordinary person. And go quietly and listen to him, because he does not prefer all this, you know, big show and pomp. And if you show up with your royal clothes, he's going to tell you to get out." He said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, he doesn't care for king or anybody." "Okay, I have to listen to the greatest singer." So he puts on old clothes and blackens his face. And so the two of them, Tansen also, both of them together, cover their face and go quietly in the simple, and it's about 100 miles away, so in Vrindavan, you know, which is quite far from Delhi. So they go by chariot, and then he says, "We have to get down a couple of miles away because we don't want people to recognize us." So they get down and they walk the last 2-3 miles, and finally it's all night, they have been traveling, and they go early in the morning, and the sun is just rising, and there is a temple where he says, "My guru sings in this temple, Haridasji." So he goes to the temple and they both sit outside, and then they slowly peek in the door. And then the guru arrives and he starts singing a beautiful song of devotion, and it is so masterful. Akbar gets shocked. He says, "I never thought that this kind of singing is possible by a human." He says, "I have heard many great singers," but, and he says, "Tansen, compared to your teacher, you are nothing." He tells him that. First he was saying, "You are the greatest singer." He says, "Compared to your teacher, you are nothing." He says, "Your highness, that is true. I am nothing." So the king says, "Why is that? Why is he so great?" He says, "Lord, your highness, he sings for God and I sing for you." See, that is the difference. He said, "I sing so I get money in your court, while he sings spontaneously. He's not singing for money. He's not singing for a job. He's singing out of pure love." And that is the difference between a professional and a devotee. You know, that true love, that complete surrender, that complete oneness. So that's what they are saying, that in the path of devotion, it doesn't matter how you love him. It doesn't matter what path you take. They say, just love him totally, love him unconditionally. We always love God for what we can get. you know, God give me, so we go to the temple with a laundry list, you know, like this. Okay, give me this, give me this, give me this, give me this, give me this. Then seventh one, he didn't give. What kind of God is this? You know, he gave me. But we forget everything that he has given us, this body, this knowledge, this abilities. No, but I didn't get that one particular thing I wanted. I wanted that job, or I wanted that house, or my son, you know, he didn't pass the exam. So then we say, this God is useless. So we love God for what we can get from him. What, you know, we treat him as an ATM machine. You know, I click in there, okay, I go to church, I say this, or I go to the temple. And so I put in this card and I should get this from God. But love God for what he is, not for what he can give you. And that is the difference between love and all the other paths. So no matter what way you love him, no matter what path you take, and that path is tinged with love, then you will definitely reach. Because when the heart and the brain both are involved, then a person progresses very fast. See, my body, but when my mind is full of love and my intellect, I have right knowledge of who God is, then when the mind and intellect are working together, then progress is possible. So that is why the path of love is very important. It should combine with the path of knowledge. We're not saying that the path of knowledge is useless, but path of knowledge and path of love, they say, are like two wings of a bird. Just as a bird to fly needs two wings, so for a human being to reach God, we need knowledge and we need love. So that is why this text, I think if you haven't read it, please read it over again, because there is some very beautiful points that Swamiji has given. Any comments or any discussion on this?
You need love in order to meditate, right?
In order to?
What I'm saying is, without love, you can't really focus on meditation.
Right.
Because if you don't have love in your heart or in your mind, then you're not really meditating in the spiritual way.
Right. Okay. Actually, even in the world, if you think about it, if you want to be a great basketball player, you have to love basketball. You may watch all the videos of Michael Jordan, read all the theories of basketball, know all the tricks and all that, and know all the styles and all the dribbling and everything you have learned from your coach. But unless you love basketball, you're not going to spend hours and hours and hours practicing. You talk to Michael Jordan or Magic Johnson or Kobe, they love the sport. They not only have the right knowledge, but they have love. If you look at great scientists, physicists or great chemists or botanists, they cannot only have knowledge of physics, they have to love physics so that they can spend hours in the lab. Unless you love, your knowledge alone is not enough. So similarly, when I sit for meditation, I have to love God who is within my heart. And so through love and through knowledge, when you meditate, then yes, definitely the meditation.
So you have to love your meditation.
Yes.
It's like, okay, so when I want to meditate, I got to love to meditate. And once you love to learn how to meditate and you love it,
right,
it gets stronger, right?
True. And actually, meditation is a joyful activity. In the beginning, it may look like, you know, it's a struggle, or especially some days when your mind is agitated, it seems like it's a struggle. But on days when your mind is quiet, and I find myself also, if my mind is quiet and peaceful and my meditation is going well, then you develop such joy. You know, meditation is such a joyful activity because it's like waves of joy arise from within. And then you start automatically loving that activity. You don't sit because, oh, why do I have to meditate? No, I love to meditate because meditation not only gives me joy, but brings me closer to God. And that is the purpose of human birth, is to reach God who is within me as life, as consciousness. So through meditation brings me closer to my goal. And so you have to love that subject. Then you will enjoy the meditation. Then it's not going to become a chore, not going to become. I mean, even if someday my meditation was not good, it's okay. At least I sat and thought about the Lord for half an hour and 20 minutes. It's good. It's a beautiful activity. There's no such thing as a bad meditation.
I love doing it in the morning.
Good.
Because I get up at 5, 5:30, I sit in the backyard of my bench and I love to meditate early in the morning. I think I get a better motivation that way in the morning before I just go out there, do my paperwork, start being, you know, yourself. I just love it in the morning.
Wonderful. That's very good. And I think regularity and sincerity is the key. You set up a time and set up a place and do it regularly, then that is great. And you will find that the more you do it, the better and better you will get. The more your mind will be calmer, the more you will be happier, more you will be peaceful. All those benefits come.
I know I got a long way to go. I'm not there yet, but I got a long way to go.
Good, good. But at least you're on the path. You found the path that you will definitely reach. And don't think of him as being somebody far away. He is the life within me. And so when I meditate on the one that is within me. And that is it. And yeah, he's there in the temple and church and mosque. And he's there in Bethlehem and Mecca and Kailash. He's everywhere. But also, he's in the heaven and all that. But also in my heart as love, as life, Om. And that is what one has to meditate on. And ultimately, the goal of meditation is that he and I are not separate. You start out by thinking that God is somebody separate, but the final result of meditation is the union, the oneness. That is called Advaita. There is no two. Because he is everything, he is everywhere. So when he is everything and everywhere, how can I be separate from him? If I am separate from God, that means God is here and I'm here and God is somewhere else. I'm here and he's somewhere in heaven or he's there in the church. Then, you know, then God is not everywhere. The moment you say God is everywhere, he is everything, all pervading, then all pervading means he's there in this pointer, he's there in this book, he's there in this hand, he's there in this nose, in this brain. Everywhere he is, so I'm not separate from him. So that is the final result of meditation. So that should be your goal. That's very good though. You're doing it regularly. That's wonderful.
I'm not going to get good at it. I just love it. When I first started, it was like, no. Now I'm getting to realize how it is, how you feel, how your mind starts to think, and it's really effective.
Beautiful. It's very nice. That's good. Thank you. Any other comments? I think that is my understanding that I am that spirit. My true nature is that spirit, that eternal spirit. That's what I really am. I am not this body, this mind, or this intellect. They are my equipment. They are my instruments, like she said. And if the body is going, or the mind, or the intellect is failing, but I am none of those. I am that. And that understanding comes through meditation. And then that person is able to handle worldly sorrows and joys and problems much better when he or she regularly meditates and comes to that understanding that who is this meditator? What is my essential nature in that?